All right, welcome into the Fan pregame. Sportsnet 590. The Fan with the day off yesterday with the Blue Jays. 3 o'clock. But was it Rome from the Dome? Dome from the home?
Rome from Dome?
You know they've lost every one of those games this year. Work from Dome.
Work from Dome.
They've lost every single one of those.
Why are we saying Rome?
Because it's like, I don't know.
We lost the plot quickly there.
Nonetheless, we're back, and football is back, and it's going to be an exciting night, weekend ahead, like so much football. But we start this off tonight, Ravens and Chiefs. Obviously, we'll talk a little bit more about this in the show, but we are trying to decide, like, what's the story of this NFL season? Well, I mean, it's the Chiefs. It's the Chiefs going for the three-peat, or the Chiefs-peat, which is going to be maybe the way that they're explaining it this year. And three-peating, as we've done the work with producer Mike Gentile putting together a whole chart for us, is not something that we see very often. So how do we put it into, like, historical context? How do we decide how hard a three-peat is? We're going to have our text line open at 590-590, standard message and data rates apply. Which sport is the easiest and the hardest to three-peat in the current era? Obviously, sports have evolved a lot since 1936. But three-peating right now between the major four sports, which would be the easiest and the hardest? Because we might see something crazy this year with the Chiefs if they can do it again.
Well, it's hard not to say that it is the NFL, given that there's an opportunity for a team this year, and maybe a really good opportunity for the Kansas City Chiefs, who are Super Bowl favorites, to actually have that three-peat. But you mentioned, we haven't really seen, there actually isn't anything that relevant when we were looking at this. Like, we haven't seen three in a row since 2000. Rarely have we seen two in a row over that stretch. Like, it is what I guess the commissioners want nowadays, which is parity-filled leagues that keep a lot of teams involved and a lot of teams have a chance to win. I still probably think, despite the second apron, that it is the NBA because one great player can command so much attention from other players, but also they just are so impactful on the floor. But with the best player in the NFL, and maybe the best coach in the NFL, and some other greats, and Chris Jones, Travis Kelce, and a core that has stayed together through it, and a quarterback, importantly, that has given away some money in order to keep the band together and to keep adding to it, I kind of think the NFL is a close second. Like, it seems impossible for Major League Baseball and the NHL, despite the Tampa Bay Lightning recently almost three-peating. But I never would have said the NFL before because it's so grueling, it's so difficult. Tom Brady didn't do it, so how easy could it be? But right now, I think it's a toss-up between the NBA and the NFL.
I think the NFL's maybe one of the hardest because you've got those one-and-done playoff games, which every other series, every other major professional sports league has a round where if you get down a game or two, you can find your way back. Mm-hmm. Even the Edmonton Oilers did it. And, of course, the NFL's never had somebody win three Super Bowls in a row. Of course, there were some title games back in, like, 65 when the Packers did it, but this is the first time, this is the last time there's been a two-peat with Kansas City. They're going for the three-peat. You mentioned that the NHL had the most recent two-peat was the Lightning. They lost in the Cup Final to almost make it three. Golden State did that as well, and 17-18 lost to our Raptors in the final. And it's been since 98/2000 where the Yankees won three in a row, and that was the last consecutive back-to-back win. So, historically, like, it's been a long time since the MLB got to this point, but obviously the NFL's never really had somebody three-peat.
I feel like it should be baseball because no salary cap. You can spend as much as you want, luxury tax. You can do it. Like, if you want to keep a great team together, no one's really stopping you. But the LA Dodgers have been pouring money into the richest or close to the richest team in Major League Baseball for the better part of, you know, more than a decade. They've been just pouring assets. They've done everything almost perfect, except actually when it matters the most.
Their season is just so long, though. I think that's it. Like,
but when it's a long season, it's like it's a true outcome. Like, the more you play, and you said it with NFL games, playoff games, where it's one, and if
anything can happen,
Although you can say, oh, it's a bunch of plays you add them up, that you should have the team that should win. But you know, things like fumbles, interceptions, they mean so much than like the balance of 10, 20 plays that are, you know, relatively unimportant given the grand scheme of things. But baseball, it's like nothing's stopping you from keeping great teams together. And yet we don't see repeat winners. We don't see teams go to the world's. Like, we've seen the Houston Astros go to the championship series every year. But it just feels like there's no recipe to keep doing it over and over again, at least in Major League Baseball. And yet we have the Chiefs now. Mm-hmm. And before the second apron showed up in the NBA, like, yeah, we saw a lot of LeBron James.
That's right.
Whether it was the Heat, the Cavs, of course, the Warriors. Celtics could start winning a couple championships mm-hmm. in a row here. But it does seem like things are changing, at least in terms of how easy it is to build a dynasty and keep a dynasty going.
Yeah, we got a text line open, 590-590. You can also send us a message, tweet us, et cetera. We're going to talk the hardest, easiest, try to compare putting a three-peat together in the current era of sports and maybe where it's gotten easier for some leagues and where it's gotten harder. Okay, let's bring in Alana Rizzo of MLB Network, High Heat, of course. Alana, how are you today? Thanks for coming on.
I'm good, guys. Great to see you. Don't forget the Denver Nuggets. Put them in that category. Okay. They could win a couple of championships, too. I'm from Colorado, so I had to throw that out there. But I do think baseball is the hardest one. I mean, you can't build a super team in baseball. It's unlike basketball, where you can have a guy say, I want this as my coach. I want this as my team. I want this to be this. I want the wind to, you know, come out of the west at a certain, mm-hmm. you know, miles per hour. So baseball's tough. It's hard to win one, let alone, you know, two or three in a row.
Well, we thought the Dodgers could have been putting the finishing touches on a super team by getting Shohei Ohtani this year. And again, we haven't seen the playoffs with the Dodgers just yet, but we've seen something unbelievably special from Shohei Ohtani this year. It's supposed to be the year where he's doing less special things, and it might be one of the most special seasons from him. So he's chasing the 50-50 club, which there are no members, 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases. You know, just because it hasn't been done before doesn't mean it's like the greatest thing ever. But like, where do you put this in terms of like the most impressive accomplishments in the sports history? I don't know if it's the home run record. I don't know if it's, you know, something, saves, wins, whatever it may be, but where do you put it? 50-50, if Ohtani gets there, how do you contextualize that?
I think it's pretty important just because it's never been done before. And we are such a game of history, such a game of statistics, such a game of, numbers, that if it's never been done before, it's pretty impressive. What I think is even more impressive is that Shohei Ohtani is a one-man industry. I mean, this is a guy that I understand he got an unbelievable amount of money, $700 million. And, you know, he's only getting $2 million a year, and he's probably making a gazillion dollars more in endorsements. But this is a guy that wherever he goes, just look at the lines to try to get one of his bobblehead dolls. I mean, this is a city in Los Angeles, of course, that has traffic anyway. And then they give away bobbleheads and people are lining up at 10 a.m. when gates don't even open until 5. I mean, there's just something very special about what Shohei Ohtani brings to an organization. And again, don't fault the player, right? Fault the organizations, fault the game. Because if Shohei Ohtani is making $700 million, the Dodgers are making $2.4 billion off of him. So this is a guy that is doing things we've never seen before. And remember, next year, you know, hopefully he'll be pitching too. So that'll be interesting to see what that does to his offensive numbers. But a two-time unanimous AL MVP, he could very well be the NL MVP this year because of that 50-50 milestone that nobody has ever achieved. And I don't care that the bases are bigger, what he's doing on the base paths. And if you look at when Shohei Ohtani is actually stealing bases, it's not in blowout games. It's not as if the Dodgers are up, you know, 10-2 and it doesn't matter. I mean, he's stealing bases in critical situations to try to push them over the edge. I mean, this is a guy that is not a selfish player at all. And again, I really like what the Dodgers did. When Mookie came back, they left Shohei in the leadoff spot. So that says a lot, too, about what he's been able to do in that leadoff spot. That's impressive to me. And I understand the argument on the other side, guys, if you're a Met fan, and what Francisco Lindor is doing. He's incredibly impressive, too. But I look at it a couple of ways. What Lindor is doing in terms of the numbers has been done before. And Lindor currently, as we sit here on September 5th, is not on a playoff team. The Mets are on the outside looking in. And until the Mets get into the postseason, maybe Lindor's, you know, candidacy for being the National League MVP goes up. But to me, if Shohei gets 50-50, which is, it is very much in reach. I mean, we're about 20 games to go. He could very well get that number. Even higher than that. I mean, it's a category that he would be the only member of. To me, Shohei, even though he's not a defensive player, you know, he's not playing defense this year because he's not pitching, to me, he's the NL MVP.
I bet he would trade all of those accolades for an opportunity to start a dynasty like we're talking about with winning some back-to-back World Series. So let's talk about this postseason opportunity for the Dodgers, because a lot of it rides on the pitching staff. I wonder for you, like, how you think that they're set up for success. Is this something that we're going to be watching Shohei into deep into the postseason? Did they do enough to get themselves there?
I certainly hope that we get to see Shohei take more than what a couple of at bats in the postseason, like we have only with Mike Trout in recent years. I mean, do the Dodgers have enough? Yes. Do they have enough starting pitching? I don't know. They definitely have the offense. I'm never concerned about the Dodgers offense. And I do think they have somewhat of a dynasty when you look at their position players, and the amount of MVPs that they have on that team already. But I do worry, and I have pause when it comes to the Dodgers starting staff, and this has been the narrative the entire season. You just don't know what you have because nobody is healthy. Okay, so if you look at the course of the season of what's happened so far in 25 starts or whatever it has been for these guys, Gavin Stone has been the Dodgers' most consistent starting pitcher, and I'm not that guy's not on my bingo card in September of 2024 saying like this is going to be my number one starter for the postseason. Clayton Kershaw's on the IL again with bone spurs and those types of situations. Tyler Glasnow. Are they bubble wrapping him because he hasn't thrown more? He's already at the innings limit of what he's done before. Are they just being cautious with him? Is he fine? Is he going to come back and be effective? Yamamoto finally is going to get the start next week at Dodger Stadium against the Cubs. Will he be the same Yamamoto that absolutely shoved in the Bronx against the Yankees early on in the season? I don't know. Jack Flaherty, of course. So if I could have everybody healthy right now, to me, my number one would be Glasnow. My number two would be Yamamoto. I'm pitching these guys in this order. Mm-hmm. My number three would be Flaherty. My number four, if you need, assuming you're not going to, sweep the first three games of a five-game series, then Gavin Stone would be my number four. Bobby Miller, for me, is not on the postseason roster. The bullpen, to me, is still, there's a lot of question marks and a lot of guys in flux. Who's going to be your closer? If you don't know, if you have a lot of closers, you don't have a closer. It's like a quarterback, right? If you have too many quarterbacks, you don't have one. So the Dodgers offense, I'm confident in. The Dodgers starting pitching, I am not.
Yeah, and one of the most reliable metrics when choosing a World Series winner is how good is your top end of the rotation. And I guess it depends for the Dodgers on whether Yamamoto or Flaherty can be pretty dominant when those important starts do roll around. Ailish and I were pretty stunned today when we were looking at the Matt Chapman news, $150 million deal with the San Francisco Giants, scrapping 2 years on a pretty disappointing, if you're Matt Chapman and his agency, 3-year deal signed with San Francisco with obviously some options there. We were stunned to see that he was third in BWAR in the National League. We thought he had a pretty difficult start. And we're like, okay, Matt Chapman's still Matt Chapman, at least what we saw with the Blue Jays. But he looks like he's earned that $150 million based on those numbers. But it is interesting, right? Because he wanted so badly to be in a position to make a lot of money. And I guess he jumped at the first big contract put out there and didn't go to free agency. So how did that deal come together and how do you grade it for Matt Chapman specifically?
The biggest thing that surprised to me, Justin, is that it happened in September of 2024. I mean, he's a Scott Boras client. Scott Boras does not sign guys or extend guys in the middle of a season. He usually lets them all go to free agency. I think that there was some, difficulty with the Blake Snell deal with the Giants, with the Jordan Montgomery deal, with the Arizona Diamondbacks, that it took a long time to get these guys signed. And then they have Blake Snell figured it out. Jordan Montgomery had, last I checked, he had an ERA above 6 and he's in the bullpen for the Arizona Diamondbacks. And I think there was some, discontentment with the way that that went down. And here's another thing too. Matt Chapman is very comfortable in San Francisco. He's very comfortable in the Bay Area. Obviously he has deep relationships with Bob Melvin, with Matt Williams, with Farhan Zaidi to a certain extent because of their time in Oakland. And why not? If you can have an opportunity to get $25 million a year and not have to go up against a guy like Alex Bregman, who is also a Scott Boras client for that third base superstar, why wouldn't you take $174 million or whatever the heck it was? Know where you are, get the financial security, have a feeling that San Francisco is going to be able to get into the postseason next year. Again, and Farhan Zaidi, who I have a great deal of respect for, missed out, of course, on the Aaron Judge signing. I don't think anybody really thought Aaron Judge was going to go to San Francisco. I think he always wanted to be in the Bronx. But that whole situation with Carlos Correa, they didn't get a huge, off-season splash that they needed, considering Ohtani went to Los Angeles, right? And San Diego on paper looked really, really good. So I like this for Matt Chapman. I like it for the Giants. It may make other free agents say, hey, you know what? The Giants might be doing something here. They have good starting pitching, you know, and good for him. Good for Chapman locking up that deal. I don't mind it at all. I'm very surprised because, again, Scott Boras usually takes his guys to free agency. But maybe Matt was like, I don't want to test those waters again. I don't want to have to be pushed and waiting and not signing until March and get behind the eight ball, you know, when it comes to contracts and being ready for the season. And, you know, and as an agent, you have to find, you know, the client has the final say. So maybe this was more of a Matt Chapman push than it was a market indicator push.
Yeah, sometimes that comfortability in the spot is key and then have that great offseason.
And when it includes $150 million, yeah, that's good comfort.
We're chatting with Alana Rizzo, MLB Network, Hahit. Okay, so it's September, so some teams are gearing up for an intense wild card race. Obviously, the Blue Jays aren't one of them. So give us a team or a wild card race that you're really tuned in on over the next couple weeks of September, because we'll be watching the Blue Jays for other reasons, probably not for that. But is there a team that you're hoping finds themselves in the wild card position when it's all said and done?
Wild card is interesting. I mean, I think both central divisions in each league are interesting. We thought they were the weakest divisions, but you could very well have three teams in the AL Central in the postseason. Yeah. You know, not named the Chicago White Sox, obviously. So, you know, I'm interested in that race. I'm interested to see how it plays out. The Guardians have the second best record right now in the American League. They have a good team. I think it's a more complete team this year for Cleveland. I think, you know, they can slug, but they can also play small ball. They have some really good defensive players. And I got to give a lot of credit to what Stephen Vogt has done there, because you think about who he had to replace, and he didn't have a ton of managerial experience, zero. And he basically just got off the field himself. So he's doing a great job in Cleveland, taking over for Tito. Think about this for a second, guys. There are three first-year managers that have their team in position to win the division. Joe Espada replacing Hall of Famer Dusty Baker could very well win the AL West. You have Stephen Vogt, AL Central, replacing Terry Francona. You have Pat Murphy in Milwaukee replacing Craig Counsell, who obviously is not retired, but is down the road in Chicago. And look at the lead that the Milwaukee Brewers have in the NL Central. So good for those guys. Not to mention Mendoza, who was a hitting coach last year, took over for Buck Showalter, who I love to death, and has the Mets very much in a postseason position anyway, at least a push to get into it. So I'm interested to see what the AL Central does. I'm a little disappointed about the Kansas City Royals. They really have not been able to beat quality teams. You know, they had an opportunity. They just got swept, I believe, by the Astros. You've got to be able to beat these good teams. And I would have loved to have seen Kansas City really make a push in that wild card chase there in the American League Central. I'm also disappointed in the Boston Red Sox. You know, signing Alex Cora to that long-term deal was great. I'm happy for them and the stability, but I thought they would be able to do more. And the thing was, we knew that the Red Sox needed starting pitching, but they were hitting, and now they're just not even hitting. So obviously you're going to get Trevor Story back. You're going to assume that Tristan Casas is going to be back for an entire season next year. Hopefully they'll be able to figure it out. But that doesn't play well in a town like Boston. It just doesn't. You can't run your team in Boston like you're the Cincinnati Reds. That doesn't work that way. I'm still very interested to see, and I might be in the minority opinion on this, I still think Baltimore wins the AL East over New York. I know that I feel that the Yankees have better pitching, but I feel like Baltimore has better offense. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Might just be me, but I don't know if either of those teams are equipped to win the World Series. Like, they're obviously very talented, but I think Houston, Cleveland give them some trouble, and whoever comes out of the National League is going to be ready to win a World Series, I think, as well. At least in terms of the award races, the NL Rookie of the Year is probably the only interesting one at this point. Mm-hmm. Paul Skeens building a lead. Jackson Merrill storming back, even Jackson Churio getting involved as well. You know, Skeens has the celebrity factor, right? How much is that going to factor in?
Girlfriends.
Yeah, that helped the celebrity factor for sure. How much is that going to play into the award voting? Like, does everyone just look at the numbers, or the Paul Skeens of it all changes
things? I don't think the celebrity factor factors into it at all. What I do think plays a factor into it, and this is just strictly my opinion, I actually had this exact same conversation today with Ken Rosenthal on our podcast, mm-hmm. Fair Territory, about what you're talking about, how the NL race is really, really interesting as far as the Rookie of the Year is concerned. It's really the only one that's, you know, anyone's paying attention to. And if you look at those numbers of those guys that you had talked about, as far as Paul Skeens, you know, as far as Jackson Merrill and Jackson Churio and these guys, it's like you look at what they do in terms of the league average. Like if you assume the league average is you know, 100 in terms of ERA plus or whatever, Paul Skeens is at 198 plus, I believe. And I'm just trying to remember the numbers off of my head. So in terms of actual production, if you look at the four and the categories that matter, so OPS for the position players, ERA, obviously, for the pitchers, Paul Skeens, as far as production, has the highest percentage of production amongst the four. But what I have a very difficult time with is the fact that Paul Skeens has the ability to win a game for his team only every fifth day. What Jackson Merrill is doing in terms of Rookie of the Year for San Diego is ridiculous. If you look at the times in which Jackson Merrill has come up to the plate in a go-ahead situation or a game-winning situation when it really matters, it's pretty remarkable what he's been able to do as a 21-year-old in that situation. And he's an impact player every single day. So it's like it's almost the same argument. Can a starting pitcher, or even more so a reliever, be an MVP for a team? I have a very hard time saying yes. I mean, you'd have to have astronomical numbers to me as a pitcher. And also, nobody on the position player side can be doing anything pretty special in order for an MVP to be a pitcher. If I had a vote, which I do not, I would pick Jackson Merrill as my National League Rookie of the Year.
All right. Things to keep tabs on. We'll take a look at the betting lines when we say bye to you, Alana. We appreciate you jumping on. Lots of baseball to keep an eye on. Even if the Jays are winding down, we'll definitely chat with you before the World Series all wrapped up. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. It's my pleasure. Anytime. You take care.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Alana Rizzo, MLB Network. I was like, okay, what? Trying to think. What are our Blue Jays storylines over the next? Because there's only a few more weeks of Blue Jays baseball, but I think it's just got to be every time Bowen Francis is out on the mound. If Bo comes back, like what mm-hmm. kind of Bo? I think there are pros and cons of Bo right now. Is do you push Bo back in? Push might be the wrong word, but do you encourage Bo to come back to play for what? A series, and he has to go through all that just to play for a series? Does he want to play to showcase who yeah. he is still? Does he want to have like a lasting impression that wasn't the Bo Bichette we saw? And then obviously Vlad, like he might collect some MVP votes. Like there's some things for the Blue Jays.
There's definitely important things for the Blue Jays. If you know, if you want to be, you want to be great next year,
they can play spoiler.
They can play spoiler, and I guess that's important in some ways. But I do think the Bo Bichette factor is pretty key. I mean, does he want to go into the offseason without changing or shifting or even having the opportunity to adjust the narrative at all? I mean, how risky is it? Because like, if we're doing the stock report on Bo Bichette, this is the lowest it's ever been.
It's worse if you come
there's
back,
nothing worse than rock bottom, right? I don't know if it's rock bottom, but
you know, knock on wood, maybe you get injured again. You're pushing it. You're trying to like really get out there to showcase yourself. Do you hurt yourself more?
It's a long off season to get yourself right.
Yeah, but there's pros and cons to Bo coming back for sure.
It's definitely the story for the Toronto Blue Jays for the remainder of the season, I suppose, unless you know he doesn't come back. But we expect him to. And into the offseason, like what is going to happen with Bo Bichette? Because you can't really look to the future without addressing the elephant in the room. And the elephant in the room is definitely Bo Bichette. I guess it's Vladdy in some ways too, but the vibes around Vladdy are good. And if you really want to keep him, I think you could probably find a way. It's just going to cost, you know, bags upon bags of money.
Okay, we had our text line open at 590-590. You can shoot us a message there. Standard message data rates apply. Okay, so we asked you, what sport is the easiest or the hardest to three-peat in? Because the Chiefs kick off their season tonight, and they might have an opportunity to do something that's never been done in the NFL. It's been done in every other league. Not recently, though. The most recent that we could pull up was not until the 2002 Los Angeles Lakers, who three-peated, and the 1998 to 2000 New York Yankees, who three-peated. But it's been a long time in the NHL, since 80-83, where the Islanders four-peated, and we want to know. So text us at 590-590. We have a couple. We'll read on the other side of the break.
Yeah, the NFL really knows how to do it, right? Like, it's not that difficult to put this together, but rematch of the AFC title game featuring the team that won the Super Bowl that has the opportunity to do something that no team has done in the Super Bowl era, to start that story on opening night, like, you can't really do better than that. And the NFL, well, it's king for a reason.
And we've got a great guest on the other side of the break to help us tee it up. Lorenzo Neal, 16-year NFL running back, fullback, joining us, four-time Pro Bowler. He's got a lot of history to help us tee up tonight and the rest of the season. We'll do some best bets, a little NFL preview, maybe some of
our
favorite
bets. We've got to finish our futures, too.
Yeah, we got some futures. We got some storylines to go through. And we have some PWHL name teases. Mm. So we'll help you get for all that and more. We'll be right back on Fan Pregame.
Fresh views on everything in the National Football League. It's the Fan Checkdown with Matt Marchese and Donovan Bennett. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. No Blue Jays tonight. They got a little day off before some big series ahead. Atlanta Braves on the horizon. Who else? We got the Mets coming to town.
Always good for the storylines.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Cardinals, so they got some important baseball ahead. But tonight we can focus on Ravens and Chiefs. I'm excited. Football's back. Like, I just want to be on my couch a lot in the next month.
It's like the perfect recipe for entering slug mode, which we enjoy activating a time or two with a Friday night game is awesome,
which is a treat.
You get the Sunday night game, of course, Monday night, of course, but all like the standalone games
really good
this week are unbelievable. And of course, there's nothing better than 1 p.m. on Sunday. So yeah, it's going to be a pretty good week one in the NFL.
Yeah, we're going to do some best bets and a look ahead, but definitely like all dialed in tonight on what the Chiefs are going to do. We're talking about this. It's our text line question. We asked you earlier in the show, what is the hardest and the easiest sport to three-peat in? No name or location texted us in. Three-peat, they said, easiest would be golf for a given tournament. I mean, we saw that quite a few times this year. And I think golf is like really riding the momentum too. If you're hitting the ball well, like, it's just, you feel undefeated.
And it's your course too.
And
like, even awful golfers like me can feel it a little bit better
like when we
on
go to
a single
Bend?
Course. No,
I'm dialed at Bray Bend.
I don't know if I'm dialed at Bray Bend. It gives me some trouble. It can work good and bad, I suppose.
They also said NHL is the most difficult because of the large number of teams in playoff format.
I do think the NHL, I think MLB is probably the hardest, but the NHL is uniquely difficult in that you win, then you got to pay everybody. Mm. You can't pay everybody, so you don't have the same team, even with the Oilers. And they're all like, hey, let's go back. Two young guys sign offer sheets and leave.
Yeah, and your body just takes a beating. All right, let's bring in our guest, Lorenzo Neal, joining us, 16-year NFL. Hey, how are you, buddy? Thanks so much for coming on.
Good. How are you guys doing today?
Is this a green screen? You look great.
You like that? You like how I can, you know, boom, I just split a little San Francisco,
that's
you know,
nice.
Background. Guys, you know, we hook it up there.
We look like we need to move.
Yeah, we need to switch things up here. Maybe we could pull up like the Toronto skyline in
for
the
us.
Middle here. And we could figure that out. But maybe I guess we know who you're pulling for on Monday night.
Yeah, I see. I'm mutual. Do you know? You don't know where I'm going. Is it
true?
I'm not in any city. Monday night, of course, we're going to go the Niners. That's going to be a great game. I tell you, the Jets, what they're doing defensively is getting after you. Robert Saleh knows the Niners very, very well. And we're not here to talk about that game. But I'm telling you, that's going to be a game. And it's going to be a tough one for the Niners. I like the Jets, what they're doing offensively, defensively. So it's going to be a good game.
All right, let's focus on tonight because we're excited. Football's back, Ravens and Chiefs, of course. And Justin and I were talking about the three-peat because this is going to be a main storyline, obviously, all season long. Is like, can the Chiefs do the thing that nobody's ever done? Maybe they're going to call it the Chiefs-peat, the three in a row. Do you think that they're the best team in the NFL? Are they the top of the class, the team that everybody has on their bulletin board this year to take down?
Oh, no question. You'd have to. When you're looking at a team, especially last year was supposed to be a down year. You think about they lose to Cheetah, and you think about where they're at. And now go look what they did defensively. Spags, what he's been able to do at defense. Chris Jones still is unbelievable, elite player, plays at a very high level. Then you went and got a guy from, I know he played in college, but where he's from, Fresno. Went out and got a guy just as fast as a Cheetah, just broke the new record in the 40. Now you got Kansas City, Travis Kelce. You guys already know he's a game changer, but he's a chain mover. Kelce knows how to get open. It's so hard to cover this guy because he's too physical for safeties and he's just too fast for linebackers. But now you have a vertical threat in the receiver. So I think Kansas City definitely is the team to beat. But don't count on my Ravens. I know Harbaugh. I played for the Ravens. I know the kind of guy he is. I know the kind of coach he is. And you got King Henry. That's going to be a tough out for Kansas City tonight.
So how important is tonight? Obviously, it's a big stage. You're going to have an immense amount of people watching. And, of course, Kansas City knows who they are. If they're not at their best, they're just going to tell themselves, hey, we'll be at our best. They did that last year. It looked like they were kind of in cruise control, and they knew when it was most important. And all of a sudden, Travis Kelce is Travis Kelce again in the playoffs, and they get it done, win their second straight Super Bowl. It just feels like this year they can't rely on that. Like, you can't rely on not having the number one seed. You can't rely, if you're serious about this Chiefs, Pete, then you have to put yourself in the best position, I would imagine. And for the Ravens, it's like, hey, we lost these guys last time out in a huge game, the AFC title game. So many questions about who we are because of the team we're playing again tonight. So what do you see in terms of the focus tonight? Like clearly an NFL game, like, you got to be there or bad things are going to happen. But how important is making a statement tonight for both of these teams?
I think the more the pressure and onus is on the Baltimore Ravens. You look at Lamar Jackson's been an MVP, but how quick has he exited from the playoffs? Here's a guy that doesn't have a lot of playoffs wins, never been to the Super Bowl. Mahomes has already reached the mountaintop. That organization, come on, guys, they're talking about a three-peat. So when you look at the pressure, who is it on tonight? Undoubtedly, it's on the Ravens. I think Ravens win this game tonight. I think Kansas City wants to win. I think Kansas City is going to play great. I just think that you look at Lamar Jackson and the psyche for this team. I think it's better for they need this win more than Kansas City. Like you just said, Kansas City, guys, you know it. They don't rebuild. They just reload.
Okay, so let's talk about what changes the Ravens have. Derrick Henry, like, how much of a needle mover is this? Is this what it takes for them to get over that hump? Like, this guy's awesome. But for you and your perspective, how much does that change everything?
I'm just waiting for D. Henry, King Henry, to fall off the mountaintop, guys. I mean, you got to realize how many carries this guy gets a year. Running backs, they say, you know, 5 to 6 years and you're done. Look at the way that this guy's been able to run and how physical he is. He's an unbelievable talent. He's not a chain mover. He's a game changer. This guy, if he's even, he's leaving. He's got the speed of a DB. He can run with anyone. So I think that this is big for Lamar Jackson, because now in third down, you can have Derrick Henry in the game on third and two and three. You could run our pass, but also just with that read option now, when you're riding Derrick Henry into the ball, into the line, now Lamar Jackson can pull that in, has to crash, because you know Derrick Henry gets ahead of steam. That defensive end, you're going to put him in a tough situation. He's going to have to start sliding down and crashing down. And if he does, Lamar Jackson pulls that ball out and he's around the end and now he's a weapon. So I'm telling you right now, without a doubt, this Derrick Henry on the Baltimore Ravens is going to be a nightmare for defense, because he has a guy like Lamar Jackson carrying the ball as well.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty impressive match made in heaven between those two. We'll see if they can put it all together. We're on the phone with 16-year NFL fullback Lorenzo Neal. Lorenzo, tell us about what it's like being a fullback nowadays. Like, I just saw that Jim Harbaugh, he's back in the league and he's employing a 300-pound fullback named Scott Matlock. Are fullbacks back? Is there going to be a comeback with two Harbaughs in the league? There's got to be at least some use for the fullback.
Exactly. And that's why I love the Harbaugh brothers, man. Scott Matlack, he's playing, played at Boise. They use him. He can play tight end, play defensive line. He can play fullback. So it's great. You look at the Niners, they still have Cal Juszczyk. So, yeah, the fullback position, I can't stand it that it's really a dying breed, because the fullback position, when I played, it was a great position. You had Sam Gash. You had Mike Allstott. You know, Larry Sinners, Moose Johnson. I mean, and we had some guys out there that Max Schrum from Seattle. So the fullback position was definitely alive and well, but now it's a dying breed, because, you know, it's RPOs. Teams want to score, and it's a finesse type of game. So that's why I like the 49ers still running the ball hard, and now Harbaugh has brought in a fullback, 300 pounds. Let's go.
Yeah. Does it frustrate you, or has it frustrated you watching the NFL when, you know, your position is not used as much anymore? Like, there's still obviously some room for it, but like you said, it was like not a glorified position, but it was an important position. Sometimes watching the NFL, do you look at it and think, this isn't the game I was playing?
And no question, I don't know if I could play in the game today, guys, because my head was my moneymaker. I use this big forehead to lead in there and blow people. So when I think about when you watch the way that I played the game in the fullback position, it's a game where you got to go in there and move people. And linebackers didn't want to see me because I was going to, a car wreck. So when you're playing the position of fullback, and I think that's why you see it lackluster, because sometimes guys get up there in this position, but when you're fullback, you got to create a new line of scrimmage, but you got to move that linebacker to give that tailback. You can't have a stalemate because now the tailback, you take away his cutting ability. So I understand because the fullback didn't have the onus and people pushing these guys. I think that's why it started to fizzle out. But there's still some good ones out there. Let's make fullbacks great again, guys. Let's do it.
Oh, that's so funny. We're talking through Lorenz and Neil. I want to ask you about like the first weeks of the season, because I feel like it can be very important for like broadcasters and fans not to have overreactions. But it's sometimes so fun when a team comes out and they're red hot or they're just trash, right? So I wonder, when you're playing for the teams, what's the game plan for the first couple of weeks of the season? Is there like a ramping up period? Is there still getting your feet wet? Or is like that first game, as Justin was talking, like that's setting the tone, and whatever team we're seeing, that's how they're performing?
I think it depends on who you are and what teams. Like a guy, the Kansas City, you know who's your quarterback. Mahomes, the best quarterback in in the NFL. But if you're a young team, if you're a team, you're just starting off, it's great to get off to a fast start, because when you get that first win, now some teams are going to have a bye next week. You don't want to be losing and going bye. So I think that the first week you see a lot of great football because teams are physical. They want to win, and a lot of guys don't understand. It is a long season, 17 games. It's a lot of football they have to play. So yes, you do. Every coach, every player wants to win that first game, because that next week it takes a long way. Think about, if you lose tonight, you don't play again till next Sunday. You got a long way. It's a long extra 4 days, to think about that loss. So I do believe teams want to win, no question. And yes, it's great to get off to a great start, but guys, don't panic in week one. If you start off 0-3, 0-4, that's when you panic. After 0-3, that's when you say, oh my goodness, we're in a big hole. So the first game is important, I understand that, but you can't lose two or three in a row.
Okay, so we got two of the best teams in the AFC going at it tonight, two really good teams in the NFC tomorrow with the Eagles and Packers. If you had to hit your wagon to one of those teams, which would it be, and are we going to see the best team in the NFC tomorrow night?
No, I don't think we see the best team in the NFC tomorrow night. I just don't know the hangover with Philadelphia. Don't know if something's going on with the quarterback and coach in Philadelphia. I know they went out and got Saquon, a team that know that they can run the ball. Just something seemed off for them last year. Didn't have that killer bravado that they had the year before. But I'll tell you, the Green Bay Packers, what they do, and the young quarterback, and what they went out and got a great running back from the Raiders and said Jacobs, and said, hey, look, we're going to run them. I think you're going to have a Green Bay team that they're going to be there at the end of the year, and you know who is as well. You look with Dan Campbell, what he's doing there in Detroit, they're going to be the teams, and of course the San Francisco 49ers. But I just think that the NFC is just loaded, and I wouldn't be surprised. And I love the Niners, bang, bang, Niner gang, but it's going to be tough for them to come out in the NFC. There's a lot of teams in the NFC that got better.
We'll keep you for one or two more. We appreciate your time. It's exciting to finally talk football. But we're talking, you mentioned the Lions, and Justin and I have been pretty, I mean, I think we're on the same page. We're big on the Lions. I think they're also getting a lot of public love. People are really in on the Lions. Is there a team you think that isn't getting enough hype that maybe we need to focus on and start giving them the credit they deserve?
Yeah, I would sing the song, but it wouldn't be very, I think that I'm crazy if I started singing it because of the fact they left. How about San Diego Superchargers, LA Superchargers? Now, how do you go against the Harbaugh brothers? I mean, these guys, John, Jack, their dad, they're just a great, they're great men. They know how to coach. They know how to get the best out of their players. I played for Harbaugh. I understand both these guys, how they're built, what they want to do. Guys play hard for those guys. So I look at the Chargers. They're a team that, yeah, people understand Harbaugh is, but look at a team. Look over in Jacksonville. I think a team that's outside that people don't talk a lot about is Jacksonville, and also the Jets. I know you guys like that team too. But Jacksonville may be that sleeper that no one's talking about in the AFC. So I look for them, and I know people are talking about them, but I tell you, Also, the Rams. Look for the Rams. They got some receivers. Matthew Stafford in that system. I know Aaron Donald's gone. Don't know a lot of guys on that defense, but they're going to be a team that's going to be competing as well.
You're right. We do like the Jets, and I'm wondering what you think about their prospects if Aaron Rodgers is healthy for 17 games.
If Aaron Rodgers is healthy for 17 games and they do what I believe, and especially with that defense, the things they have, Quentin Williams and all those guys, I'm telling you right now, they're going to win the AFC East. They're going to oversee the Buffalo Bills. You heard it here. I'm telling you right now, I like Aaron Rodgers and them to win that conference.
Okay, last one for you. Appreciate your time again. And I'm a Bills fan, so that was a tough one.
I love Josh Allen. Josh, my guy. He's
okay,
so
good.
Fireball.
Okay.
I'm from the battle. I love Joshy.
Perfect. Then we're good now. But this is the last time you can give like an untarnished Super Bowl prediction, because after today it doesn't count because it's already been season beginning. So who do you think's in the Super Bowl? You don't even have to pick, but like, what are the teams you like?
You know what? I really believe that the Jets and the Chargers would, if you said, hey, Jets and Chargers, one of those two sleeper AFC teams, but it's hard to beat Mahomes. I can't take that away from those guys, especially what they did on the offseason. So I'm going to say we're going to go with Kansas City and NFC. I'd love for my Niners to finally get over that hump and take care of Kansas City. It would be sweet, but it's going to be hard to get past Detroit. I think Detroit, Aaron Glenn is going to be probably out of there in a year. I think he's going to be a head coach after this season. Watch, mark my words, Aaron Glenn, what he has, that defense and the way that they're playing defense, the way that the team's structured, that's going to be a tough out. They should have beat the Niners last year in the playoffs. I think coach, you know, you love Dan Campbell. Mm-hmm. He's a gamble. Hey, he didn't have to take some of those risks, but he did it. The guys believed in him. They could have been have been a Super Bowl team last year. So, you know what? I'd like to see Kansas City and the Niners, but I'm going to go on a limb and say Detroit.
Okay. I think we actually have predicted that similarly ourselves. So we feel expert
level now.
We appreciate this. So this has been so much fun. Honestly, hope we get a chance to chat.
Enjoy San Francisco
as the season goes on. And love the background today, Lorenzo. Appreciate it.
No worries. We'll do it soon, guys.
Awesome.
Cheers.
Thanks so much. Lorenzo Neal, 16-year NFL career and working for 95.7 The Game Sports Radio in the Bay Area, as you saw that. Love it. That was fun. Gets excited.
All right, so we got Lorenzo's
Super Bowl prediction. And
we should finish our predictions.
Yes, I just want to give one other prediction today because this is important for the listeners. Good Morning Football, Peter Schrager is like absolutely dialed when it comes to picks. So he's guessed the last five Super Bowl winners correctly, and he does it at the beginning of each season, like today. And he's picked the last five winners correctly, but he's also picked most of the time he's even got both of the finalists. Like, he's nails. He picked the Chiefs, the Bucks, the Rams, and the Chiefs again both times. So today he does his big unveiling and he's picking the Chiefs again.
Yeah, they love ripping off an article of clothing and showing a jersey.
They strip more than anything.
I don't think we should employ that into this show.
They're definitely stripping a lot on Good Morning Football.
It's definitely their thing.
Nonetheless, so he unveils that he's going for the Chiefs. He's the one that was using the words Chief Pete. I've used it a few times because he tried to sell the listeners that it wasn't going to be a three-peat. So then you thought, oh, he's going to pick the Packers. But no, he goes, it's going to be a Chiefs Pete over the Packers. So that's what he thinks.
Okay, so the guy who gets it right all the time has picked the Chiefs over the Packers. It seems like a lot of people are on the Chiefs. I am also on the Chiefs. I don't think you should be looking for an alternative. I think you should be finding alternative ways to bet the Chiefs. And yes, I'm going to do just that. I've already done that. In fact, Kansas City to beat Detroit, exact Super Bowl matchup, 55-1 is out there.
You know, I'm all over that.
KC over Green Bay, who I think is going to be really good as well, is 70-1 right now.
Wow, 70-1
for that. Like, if you believe in KC, you don't have to settle for the plus 550 that they are right now. I even found Super Bowl plus Patrick Mahomes MVP 20-1. I think Patrick Mahomes is going to win an MVP this year in addition to Super Bowl. So I'm all over Kansas City in every way possible, and I'm trying to find creative ways in order to bet them, because plus 550 is not great to wait around, but it's probably something you want in your portfolio because at the end of the day, Kansas City, with a team far better than it had last year, should be strong Super Bowl favorites, which they are. But honestly, you could make the argument that they should be shorter than 550 right now.
I agree. And those two paired up, I love the future bet of Casey over Detroit. Like, I think you've heard it. I'm a big Lions gal this year. So I like that one too. Okay, so let's do a couple of our favorite bets before the NFL season kicks off. Favorite milestone bets. So these are ones that you can find on books of like a player milestone or a team milestone. Mm-hmm. And you can really only place them before today's
I feel begins. Like you have about 100 in these in your pending wagers. So I'll let you just go off here with your milestone bets.
Okay, so there's like a bit of a theme between them. Obviously, I was talking about the Lions. I've got Aiden Hutchinson, most sacks, 11-1. Mm-hmm. Right, that's just regular season sack leader. Great odds. He could be the best defensive player in the game. He could be. So I think that's a good one. Okay, so this one we were laughing about before the show started. Most kickoff return touchdowns. Like, this is like a bit degenerate of me. But
a bit.
When the new kickoff rules came in, the Steelers signed Cordarrelle Patterson. Both. Yeah, really? That's why I stumble when I see it. Anyway, Patterson. So he's all like one of the best all time kick return guys, of course. They're 26-1, and they might have the best guy at the job. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not big on the Steelers in general, but I think this is an interesting value pick. Those are two right off the hop.
That almost doesn't make sense. If they have the best return man and they're 26-1,
yeah, so
you think that's a pretty good one. So I jumped on that nice. With you. I'm more going towards the failure route here, because obviously there are a lot of things to celebrate, you know, 4,000 yards through the air. Who's going to get that to that milestone? 2,000 yards, touchdowns. But I'm looking at a couple guys who can have a lot of success, but also moments of failure. Most interceptions, Josh Allen is the favorite in most books. Josh Allen threw a bunch of interceptions last year, but I think Josh Allen probably has been thinking
He's
about
maturing,
those interceptions
Justin.
A lot and is going to try to cut them down on them. So who's going to be given the opportunity to throw a lot of picks? Rookie quarterbacks are guys that are basically rookie quarterbacks. So I got Caleb Williams 13-1 to throw the most picks. Like, he does not have a leash.
Great. He's going to be out there.
He's going to throw a ton of touchdowns, but he's going to mix in some interceptions at 13-1. And Will Levis, like, Tennessee's got to, this is year two. Tennessee's got to find out what they have in him, because they got to figure out if they're going to draft a quarterback again this upcoming offseason. So Will Levis in year two is going to be able to sling it as well. Two gunslingers, two guys that are going to have a lot of opportunity to have ups and downs. Will Levis is 12-1 to throw the most interceptions. This is all assuming that Josh Allen cleans things up a little bit.
Okay, coach of the year, since we just talked about the Harbaughs. Like, that guy is so loyal. Lorenzo, he loves the Harbaughs. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going with
Jim Harbaugh's the favorite.
I'm not going with a Harbaugh. I'm going with kind of around the same odds. I'm big on the Falcons this year.
Okay.
Almost forced to be big on the Falcons this year. 11-1 for Raheem Morris to be coach of the year. I mean, a team that missed the playoffs. This is the same thing with the NHL.
Yep.
And Sheldon Keefe is my favorite pick for that. Not that, like, a team that underperformed, it's going to perform. Boom. I think Falcons could do it, and the Cardinals, of course. They're terrible last year. Like, we know that. If they can just maybe make the playoffs and sniff around at it, it could be good value at that number at 14-1.
Yeah, I think I missed the boat here, because it seems like you got to, at least me, I want to wait for something to happen. Everyone's so kind of crushed and condensed right now, at least in terms of the odds. Harbaugh's the favorite at 10-1, and Morris and Gannon are 14 and 16-1 respectively. But I do feel like I missed the boat on Mike McDonald. Everyone's talking about the Seattle Seahawks.
What does it move to?
Everyone's talking about Mike McDonald. He was like 30-1 a month ago when I was looking at it. Now he's 10. We got to see something happen before I make a bet in coach of the year. But it's an interesting market, because it seems like anyone could win.
Okay. Let's do best bets for tonight, because the game is on the horizon. I know that we just talked about it with Lorenzo Neal. I think that Derrick Henry is going to be a big focal point for tonight, of course. You want to show off your new fancy toys. So I think actually it's the most bet for tonight. So I'm not breaking any news here, but Derrick Henry touchdown, -125. But I like the value in him to get the first touchdown of the game. The Chiefs are chiefing tonight. It's like, you know, the banner. It's a whole spectacle. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're a little sloppy to start, or they're fired up, so this could go poorly. But him to get the first touchdown of the game, as I say, like, Ravens might be wanting to show off. There's a little bit more value, but he's the most popular first bet tonight anyway.
Yeah, I have one rule going into the season. I am not betting against the Chiefs really under any circumstances. It's one of those things where you do it, and then if you lose, and you're just thinking, like, why would I bet against the greatest player and probably the greatest coaching player and coach tandem, at least, you know, since Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, but currently as is in the NFL. Like, I just have no interest in ever betting against the Kansas City Chiefs, and you push if they win by field goal tonight. So I'll go Chiefs minus three. It may be, the most likely result, and Vegas knows, so it is the Chiefs to win by a field goal. But I think the Chiefs are the better team, and I think they're loaded and ready to go for another big season. So I like Kansas City. I think they're going to have a far better regular season than they had last, and they're going to have just as good of a postseason. And it starts tonight with a win over the Baltimore Ravens.
And Taylor Swift is confirmed to be in attendance tonight.
There's some weird things going on there. Am I going into the wrong areas of the internet as
don't
well for that?
Don't listen to the internet.
So there's no planned
breakup?
They're
really dating.
There's no date?
No, there's no date.
You sure?
They're happily in love, and she'll be on TV more than anyone can stomach tonight. I'm sure we'll see lots of tweets about it. Football's back. It'll be, and I see Taylor Swift on my timeline one more time.
Yeah, it's going to be a big night for Taylor
Swift. It's going to
be good. Yeah, you're right.
And the Chiefs. You know, they're going to Chief Pete, maybe. Sounds like they might.
And Baltimore, too. Like, Baltimore's got a chance to really make a statement tonight. It is a great kickoff game in the NFL. We shouldn't be surprised.
Yes. All right. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll be helping it tee up. What will be the Blue Jays and the Braves tomorrow night. Enjoy football tonight. We'll see you tomorrow.